This podcast is brought to you by The Province.
The Province Sports Podcast.
Another PatCast here at Province Radio on a Thursday afternoon, May the 12th. Jeff Patterson joined by Province hockey writer Jason Botcher. Botch is back, and I noticed a week has gone by here, and last week the hand was all wrapped up, and you were a man that was on the disabled list, and we got all these videos and cameras around here. You can wave to the cameras. The hand is back.
Still not, as you can see here, still not.
Okay, not 100%.
Doesn't look
normal. Not 100%.
Still can't lift things, can't clean out the garage, can't put up any more patio lights.
Well, that's a convenient excuse then, not to have to do homework or,
that's
housework.
Right. Yeah.
Work around the home.
It's been building.
I have to say this, that my father is a regular listener to the PatCast.
Oh, he is?
And I'm not sure that he's in the wheelhouse of the demographic exactly, but we love all our listeners.
Sure.
And we're in no position to make light of anybody that tunes into the PatCast.
That's right.
We love them all. But he said, good PatCast last week, but too much about Botcher's hand.
Oh, there was?
Yeah, so apparently I got to move on. Yeah, so the hand is now, we just got the update, and now we move on to the story that was.
He has no interest in the hand.
No, he got all that he needed and then some about the hand. He learned more about your hand than he could ever have imagined going to know about the hand injury.
I apologize.
No, it's all good. Let's get to the story of the day, story of the week, certainly, which had been building, and you had promoted it here,
right
on, the PatCast,
here on the PatCast,
and we wondered, and when we left the studio last week, it sounded like it was going to be in the Sunday paper.
Got delayed again.
I know, I got up, I looked at the Sunday, no, where is it? But there it was, Tuesday night, hit the paper. Was it in the print in the Wednesday edition then?
But midweek, the higher ups figured midweek was the spot. Apparently,
that's the sweet
spot.
If you want
a big hit in the local market, you do it midweek.
Well, quite a tale it was, and well told certainly, and I'm sure it got all sorts of attention. And I saw a local media TV picking up on it and trying to tell. It's a difficult story to tell, certainly, but you told it as well, I think, as you can tell. That, I mean, just crazy stuff.
Yeah.
Like, that really is the plot of some sort of Hollywood movie.
Yeah, definitely like a movie of the week or something like that. I mean, it was pretty intense, and a relief for me to kind of get it out there finally, because it had been on something that had been kind of weighing on my mind for a number of months when I first heard about it. And then from there, it was trying to make sure I had the story and putting it all together, and the final piece, when I had it all worked out and felt comfortable with it, I wanted to get comment from Lyndon, and he was in Burma. He had to call me he popped up on, that was the Canucks were trying to figure out if he was going to be within some kind of cell signal, and he popped up for a few minutes the other day and, from Burma, and, that kind of, completed the circle. And then I had the story.
I thought you were going to say Burnaby.
No, not Burnaby.
Burma. What's he doing in Burma?
I don't know. He's on some big tour. Maybe scouting some new players. I don't know. He said he was in Burma for 7 or 8 days, I think, and in Thailand and a few places out there. So I think he's having a good time.
That's quite a ways away from small town Saskatchewan. Right. We know that he's going to be there to support his mother in court. What's your sense? You talked to him, obviously, briefly, just given the logistics involved, but you did talk to him. He's a soft-spoken guy at the best of times. We know that. I don't know that I feel, I mean, I've been around him for a couple of seasons, but I don't know that I truly know Lyndon Vay. But,
right.
I mean, what's your sense? How can this not affect you at every single level? And then to try to perform at the highest level as a professional athlete, that's got to be difficult. I mean, what was your sense of what he makes of all of this?
Well, I think that's one of the interesting parts of the story is the fact that he talked about not being able to use it as an excuse. It's something that others around the team and on the team have talked to me about. And on a human level, it makes no sense, because, of course, that's an excuse. Like, just for one of us who don't need to be at peak mental and physical performance to succeed at our jobs, something like that would weigh on you every day, and it would impact you in a way that is probably inexplainable to someone that's not going through something. Like, I mean, it's just impossible to kind of understand what's going inside of his head. So on a human level, of course it's going to impact him. But on a professional hockey level, he's right. Like, I mean, if he's going to make it in this like cutthroat world of professional sport, you can't have excuses. Like, there isn't space for it, because the minute that you take the foot off, the minute that you do have an excuse, someone else is out there to take your job. And I think you saw that happen in training camp when he was a surprise. It was a surprise when he was one of the final cuts and he ended up on waivers. And he himself admitted that he didn't have a very good training camp and didn't have a very good preseason. Now you go back and you start wondering, well, how much of this was a factor, right? This is a trial that's been delayed a couple of times already. It was originally supposed to go to trial in the fall of 2014, which would have been even more difficult, right? Because that would have been during the hockey season. Then it got delayed another time. And now here we are when it's finally set to happen May 24th. And at least he has the opportunity to be at home in Saskatchewan with his family when it goes down.
Yeah, a couple of things jumped to mind immediately. And online, where I read the paper or read the story of the province website, the photo that accompanied the story was Lyndon and his mother in the Canucks locker room. But I think it was from that mother's road trip.
Yeah,
and you know, you think about the mother's road trip and, oh, isn't this great? I mean, you know, these are the people that helped get these guys to this level, and they wouldn't be anywhere without their mom. And, you know, they're having a great time, and there's Beth Bartkowski becoming a superstar, you know, gobbling up TV airtime, and we're all having a good laugh at that. And then now, knowing what we know, I mean, that's just another layer to have his mom there with him. I mean, has to bring all this stuff flooding right back.
Yeah, well, no doubt about it. And she's a key part of the entire case. I mean, alleged against Lyndon's dad, Curtis Vey, and then this conspiracy case, you know, Bridget is going to be she's the cornerstone of the Crown's case. And it must have been very important and memorable for Lyndon to have that opportunity to be on that trip and at least not have the. Can you imagine if this was already in the public discourse?
Yep.
And that was happening? I think it would have been a far different trip.
The other thing that jumped out to me right away was, and again, full credit to you for getting the story and telling it the way you did, but how in a Canadian market does this story not come to light? I mean, it's 3 years old, or parts of 3 years old now. Yeah. Before it predates Lyndon being acquired by the Vancouver Canucks. Canucks were aware of this when they made the deal to get him at the draft 2 years ago.
I don't think that's clear. I don't think.
No. Oh, okay.
No, we're not clear on that.
Okay. Fair enough then. But regardless, you know, it happened in a small town in Saskatchewan where everybody must know everybody else. And then to work and play in a hockey market like this, well, I'm just amazed that somehow, somewhere along the lines, the dots weren't all connected a little sooner.
Yeah, I think it's the timing of the case for me. Like, I think, where was he in 2013? I mean, he was playing in the minor leagues.
Manchester,
I think it would have been more of a side note to a story this big. Wouldn't have been a big deal. I think if he was playing in the NHL when Curtis and Angela Nicholson were first arrested, I think it probably would have come out then. But the fact that that when the case really first came to light in the press 2013 and he was in the minor leagues, it's not that big a part of the story, right? It's something that I think most people probably would have ignored. But I, like you, you know, I would, every time I talk to the lawyers in Saskatchewan, I would basically say something along the lines of, how has this gotten this far without anyone reporting that the son of Bridget and Curtis is Lyndon Vey, who's in the NHL? And then generally the response would be something like, yeah, but you know, this is a marginal NHL player. And it's not in the kind of scope of the case. It's a really small element, and they are right. But, you know, in a town, he grew up in a town of less than 1,000 people. Like, I grew up in a town of 20,000 people, and there was one guy drafted in the first round by the Boston Bruins, played a couple of games in an entire career, and he was basically like a god in the town. Like, I mean, he's still living off it and Facebook and stuff. So, you know, his short Boston Bruins career. So it's a big deal wherever you are in Canada when someone gets drafted into the NHL or makes the NHL or even plays a game. So obviously people in small town Saskatchewan knew that. And for some reason that the reporters that went down there to cover the story and have covered the story never either didn't know it or didn't report it.
Are we sending you in for the trial? Are you now like a crime reporter?
I did do 6 months of reporting crime for the Toronto Sun. I think my I kind of retired so I'm not
you'll
going
leave
I
that,
think,
you'll yeah, leave that to
the big post media team. I think there's there's someone else who can go down and cover that.
All right, but it begs the question, where does it go from here? I mean, we talked about the circumstances under which Lyndon Vey has tried to forge a National Hockey League career these last couple of years. And, you know, maybe we haven't seen him at his best. And you said all along, you know, this is going to cast the unnamed player at that point. It's going to cast him in a new light. And now I think people will step back and say, well, God, I mean, how hard? I mean, absolutely. I mean, it must have been impossible for this guy to give it his all.
Right.
But the National Hockey League is not a charity. Lyndon Vey's contract is up.
That's right.
So, you know, where do the Vancouver Canucks go with Lyndon Vey, knowing all of this, also knowing the kind of player that he has been for them for the last couple of seasons?
Yeah, the way that it's going, he looks like after they get Granlund and with McCann, if McCann is still part of this roster and not traded, and then let's say they draft another center, in the top five here coming up in the NHL draft, it doesn't, like, numbers wise in the organization, it doesn't look good for Lyndon Vey having a real another shot at kind of forging this NHL career. So I'm not sure he kind of fits into the Canucks plan. I do know that when the case is over, there will be some relief for him, right? I think that he will be able to get some closure and move on to the next chapter in his life. I think overall, talking to Trevor Linden and talking to players on the team, talking to Willie about this, they all kind of believe that he's done a really good job of keeping focus as much as possible on hockey. But I think he's going to be able to do more so when the case is finally resolved. And he kind of mentioned that to me, that he's been looking forward for a long time to this being over. So if I'm the Canucks, I'm this far down the Lyndon Vey road, I've given up a pretty significant pick to get him. I would probably look at trying to sign him again. I do think that he can be, a quality defensive type forward on like a fourth line. I always have thought, and I've talked about it before, that he's kind of miscast.
Right.
People believing that he's going to be this offensive top six guy. I don't think that's Lyndon Vey, but I think he's smart. I think he's defensively aware. I think he's the type of guy who can be productive for you on a fourth line. And I think that there are probably bigger things to come for him when this is over.
Yeah, I mean, at this point of his career, he still remains a tweener, and we saw that as he spent part of the season in the American Hockey League and some of the season here in the National Hockey League. But I tend to agree with you. I mean, you can't deny that the smarts are there. But then you watch the playoffs and you see a team like the St. Louis Blues, and you just think, like, really, like, could the Canucks have any success with Lyndon Vey as their fourth line center,
right,
you know, but going on a deep run in the playoffs?
I know, but we're a long way from that. I mean, look at the Blues. Look how deep they are. Look at Tampa Bay. You know, they've been able to do this without Stroman and Stamkos. I mean, these are, like, loaded teams. I think when you look at the teams that are left and you see the number of good players that are on each of these teams, and some of them good young players like on Tampa, it shows you how many assets you have to compile to put together to make a long run. So we're a long way from thinking about the Canucks competing with the Blues. Yep. Can they do okay for the next couple of years with Lyndon Vey on a fourth line? Yeah, I think they could do fine. I don't think that you're right. They're not going to compete with the big boys in the West, though.
We keep hearing these stories about, nobody in this country's watching the playoffs. So you get these summer nights now, or spring nights that feel like summer nights. How much should Tam? I mean, there's so many things to do. I can understand why people in Vancouver maybe aren't glued to their television sets on a nightly basis. And yet, I found the second round, like, off the charts compelling.
One of the best second rounds I think that we've seen in a decade. Generally in the NHL, it's always been about the first round. Teams are kind of exhausted after that. They don't have a lot left. The pace of the first round is always exhilarating, and the teams can't keep it up. And we've been let down all the time in the second, but every series was phenomenal. I think the way that Pittsburgh's playing right now is electric. I think the way that the Blues are built, they have scoring up and down that lineup. I mean, there's a lot to like right now, J-Pat, from what's happening in the NHL playoffs.
Yeah, I see the Pittsburgh, and they've sort of got that feeling of a team that, you know, maybe is on the the kind of run that they're going to need to win the cup. But I've watched St. Louis. I watched them through that first round against Chicago, got that monkey off their back. And, you know, last night against Dallas, I mean, it wasn't even a fair fight, and they've just got the look. And again, it's just, find me a weakness in that St. Louis lineup, it was maybe their goaltending, but Brian Elliott's been terrific there. And really excited about another game seven tonight, Nashville and San Jose, and we'll see both those teams playing pretty well. And you mentioned Tampa, and it's kind of funny that, and maybe it's because they, mowed through Detroit quickly, and then they get through the second round, the Islanders pretty quickly. Not a lot of people talking about the Tampa Lightning, even though they got to the Stanley Cup final a year ago. They just, to me, they're kind of going about their business awfully quietly, but, I wouldn't bet against the Tampa Lightning either, the way that they play.
No, and with Stamkos' potential of him coming back in this playoff. But also, what does it mean for the offseason, right? Like, they've proven that they are capable of winning without Stamkos. The chances are increasing that Stamkos is not going to be back there. And it's kind of a story that's melted away here in Vancouver. But what would happen if the Canucks maxed out an offer for Steven Stamkos? What kind of difference would he make in this lineup? How much closer would the Canucks be, in competing against the Blues and the Hawks and all these other, the Sharks you got to include if Steven Stamkos is all of a sudden in that top six?
Yeah, I look at the St. Louis Blues, and the more I watch them, the more I think, man, the gap right now between a team like that and the Vancouver Canucks. I mean,
even with Stamkos in Vancouver.
Yeah, I mean, Stamkos would be, it'd be fun to see the guy play 82 times a season, and you know that he'd pump in a few goals for the Vancouver Canucks. But, I just look at the back end of the Blues, and Pietrangelo, again, just continues to emerge as like that stud number one guy. They've got Shattenkirk. Jay Bomeister continues to eat up big minutes. And then, how the hockey world missed on that Colton Parayko. 29 other teams for another decade are going to be like knocking their head against the wall. I mean, the Canucks did well finding Ben Hutton the way they did in the fifth round, but Parayko, big stud guy, right shot, all that kind of stuff that you're just looking for. He's out there in the final minute of games as a rookie protecting leads in the playoffs. Like, it's unbelievable stuff. So, I like the St. Louis Blues, and we'll see how that one all plays out. Blues get past the Dallas Stars, and that opens a whole bunch of cans of worms, I suppose, too, because the downfall for the Dallas Stars, as many thought it was going to be botch, was goaltending. And so...
And defense. They weren't very good defensively.
Now, all of that is against the context of they didn't have Tyler Seguin. Like, they're,
Right.
So... Yeah, their goaltending was terrible, and yes, Chris Russell wasn't very good for them, but how much would the Stars have been playing in the other team's end had they had a 90-point guy in Tyler Seguin? But fact of the matter is they didn't. Just like Tampa doesn't have Stamkos, Tampa's found a way. The Dallas Stars now are left to sort of pick up the pieces, and lots of people want to connect the dots here and think, well, Ryan Miller. Is there any way? Do you think there's any chance that the Dallas Stars would look at a guy like Ryan Miller here with 1 year left on his deal, or do you think that they will look in a different direction to upgrade their goaltending?
Yeah, I'm not sure Dallas and Vancouver are capable of making a deal. But I mean, it's at least something to consider. I mean, if I'm the Vancouver Canucks, I'm exploring every option there is, trying to trade Ryan Miller, trying to find a landing spot for him in that next year. I think Markstrom's ready. He's ready to step up and perform. I think he's ready to be a number one guy. And if they can get assets for Miller and put Miller in a position where he can go out and try to win in kind of this last chapter of his career, I think that would benefit him, and I think it would benefit the Canucks. I'm not sure there's a fit in Dallas, but, I'd be looking at Anaheim. I'd be looking at Dallas. I would be looking to any little corner I could to try to get an asset in return for him.
Dallas is interesting only because they've got such a good team. So many good forwards that they let an opportunity get away here. And frankly, I didn't have a dog in the fight, but it's hard to watch when goaltending implodes like that at the second round of the playoffs. You want to believe that your goaltender is going to be able to make you a save, and the Dallas Stars just didn't have that kind of confidence. And Jim Neal seems like a pretty shrewd guy. He's done a nice job building or rebuilding that team. I can't imagine that they come back with those two guys, although they're committed to more than $10 million in each of the next 2 years. So, Tom Gilardi's going to have to write an awfully big check if they buy out one, or could they possibly buy out both of them? It's hard to see them buy out both of those goaltenders, but I got to believe that one is done.
I would think so. And that was one of the teams that was interested in Eddie Lack last summer and was looking to possibly trade with the Vancouver Canucks. And the Canucks really didn't want to trade Eddie in the West. They ended up moving him to Carolina. He ends up in a situation that isn't very good for him or the team or anyone. And the Dallas Stars still haven't fixed their goaltending. They're a long way from doing it. But what, I mean, if you're the Stars though, like, of like, would you then bet on a $6 million Ryan Miller who was good this year? I think he was good when he's rested. I don't think he's a guy that can play 65 games in a season, but I think to me, if you can keep him around 50 games over the course of a year, he can be good. He's not going to be great. He's not going to be sensational. I don't think he's going to steal you multiple rounds in the playoffs, but I think that you could, to me, count on him to be solid, maybe average, better than average, maybe a little bit better. I don't know. Like, from a Stars perspective, would you be looking at a guy like Miller to solve that problem?
Well, I mean, the Canucks would have to retain some money, so I don't think it would be a $6 million gamble for them. The issue, though, and you pointed it out, and we watched it. I mean, the proof was there in the pudding throughout this season. When arrested, Ryan Miller still looked like an NHL goaltender.
Right.
When run down, you know, age was catching up with him. He was not close to his best. What's the problem with the playoffs? You're playing every other night for 2 months if you go where you want to go. Is a 36-year-old Ryan Miller capable of delivering that kind of playoff run? Boy, I would have my doubts at this stage of his career. And I wonder, too, and it's not all on him, but I do wonder how much the St. Louis, the failed experiment when he was picked up at the deadline, thought to be the savior by the Blues a few years ago, and that didn't work. We're, what, 3 years down the road now? I mean, you know, other teams see that kind of stuff. I don't know that Ryan Miller is the answer necessarily to the Dallas Stars' woes, and it's not so much what he could do in the regular season, it's what could he give you every other night for a long run in the playoffs.
Yeah, and whether this is true or not is kind of irrelevant, but because it's out there and there's a theory out there that he's a really good goalie for a bad team to have. And that's to say that he needs, for him to get comfortable and in a groove, he needs a lot of shots, and he's better in games where he faces 35, 45 shots than in games where he faces 20. And that's part of the why people theorize that St. Louis wasn't a good fit. Now Dallas doesn't have a very good defense. They do tend to give up a lot of shots. Maybe he is a better fit there. But like you said, can you count on Ryan Miller to be there every other day over the course of a playoff? Because, you know, what we saw this year in the second half of the season, Markstrom starting one, Miller starting one. That was a perfect scenario for Ryan Miller. No playoff team does that. Every year, what playoff teams do, generally, they pick one goalie and they ride him.
Right. And we remember Ryan Miller was fine in October when he played every game but one. But then it caught up to him in November and December, and then he got hurt in December.
He sort of fallen apart at the end of that. He played 14 of 15, and you could see by the end of it that he was nowhere near the guy that he was to start the season.
It's been fascinating to watch here in the playoffs as teams have been picked off. You know, Chicago loses. Ah, the Hawks should have got Dan Hamhuis. Washington went out. Ah, they should have got in. You know, Barry Trotz, the connection there. Dallas last night with Chris Russell instead of Dan Hamhuis. Stars should have had Dan Hamhuis.
Hamhuis would have been the difference
maker. Maybe all three of those teams should have picked up Dan Hamhuis. They didn't. But as you look back now, and we've got the benefit of hindsight, but you look at the trade deadline and you try to assess the winners and losers of the NHL trade deadline. And watch it, it's crazy, really, when you think how much coverage is devoted to the NHL trade deadline. And here we are down to three teams are into the final four. San Jose and Nashville will figure out who that fourth team is going to be. You know, Tampa didn't do a lot at the trade deadline. Pittsburgh Penguins made some trades, but not so much at the deadline.
Trevor but Daly, over the course of the
over
year.
The course they, of, they, but they just at the, you know, all the hype around the deadline. You know, the St. Louis Blues, they have figured out their lineup and they've run with it pretty much all season long. You know, a team like San Jose pick up Nick Spaulding. They pick up James Reimer, who hasn't played in the playoffs. You know, looking back now, the Calgary Flames may have been the big winners at the NHL trade deadline when you look what they got for Jiří Hudler, what they got for Chris Russell. They got a draft choice, I think, from Minnesota as well when they traded David Jones there. The Calgary Flames seem to have played that trade deadline beautifully.
Yeah, and I think we thought that at the time, and it's kind of played out that way. But I do think that teams would have benefited from Hamhuis. I mean, he was playing really well when he came back from that jaw injury, and I think that he could have been a difference maker for a team like the Chicago Blackhawks.
And another weekend passed this past weekend. I don't know if you saw the pictures were out there, the video on the Canucks website as well. Dan Hamhuis making public appearances at charity events.
Where was he?
Yeah, another Canucks Autism Network. He's wearing his Canucks jersey a month out from his contract expiring. Right. I mean, again, that's the kind of guy Dan Hamhuis is, that he lends his name and his time to charity. But boy, I find it interesting where most of his teammates have scattered now for the summer, and they're probably, well, you know, Lyndon Vaes in the jungles of Burma, and here's Dan Hamm, who's still around town and still representing the Vancouver Canucks at charity events. I don't know if there's going to be a separation or not. I can't get a full read on that.
Yeah, I think there is going to be a separation. I think it's, especially if the Canucks can do what they want at, around the draft, and that's trade for a top four defenseman or top five defenseman. If they pull off a trade for a guy, Hamm is not coming back. And that's their goal right now. I mean, they would like to acquire someone around that time before free agency hits. And if they don't, though, I mean, Hamm Hughes is going to be one of their backup plans. Depends on how much it's going to cost them. And it depends how much, we always talk about the pay cut or the hometown discount that Hamm Hughes will have to take. But Hamm Hughes, there is still a plausible scenario where he does come back and he's maybe a guy on their third defensive pairing. And, there are things worse than that, for this team, especially if it's a 2 or 3 year deal.
You wish that he could somehow magically over the offseason transform into a right shot. I mean, that, we've talked about the logjam on the left side. They still need somebody on that second pairing that, can play the right side and play it effectively. So.
Yeah, that's essentially it. They're looking to acquire someone to play with Ben Hutton to complete the top four. So your top pairing would be Tanev and Edler, and then your second pairing would be Hutton with a newly acquired right shot D. And if they do that, I think that Hamm Hughes is very unlikely to be coming back.
Speaking of Ben Hutton, how much time are you spending watching the World Hockey Championships? How many minutes?
I haven't watched any of it yet.
You haven't watched a minute?
No, not yet.
Are you getting into it in the medal rounds, or are you just not on your radar?
No, I'll definitely watch some of it coming up. I was listening to the game on the way in today. But, I've had other things on my mind. I've had my hand injury, although your dad doesn't want to hear any more about that. And I had this Lyndon Vay story that was kind of eating up a lot of my attention. So I haven't. But why? How much have you watched?
I think 11 minutes.
Oh, there you go. Plus, I've been following, I'm from Toronto. I've been following the Raptors, too. So my time's been eating up here. But how exciting were the 11 minutes? How thrilling?
That's over the course of 3 games, I believe, right, that I've watched 11 minutes.
Was it electric? Was it?
Oh, you can't get enough of the tan. Man, right, playing the point there on the big ice, and he and Morgan Riley seem like they're forming a pretty good tandem. Hutton hasn't been in the lineup every time they played. He's sort of the extra guy that they've got there. Bill Peters, the coach, looks like he's got some love for some other guys, maybe Eastern Conference guys that he's more familiar with. They bring these guys together, throw them all together, and you can understand if a coach, Ben Hutton doesn't have a huge profile in the National Hockey League, so I can understand if a coach goes with the guys, I guess, that he trusts in a short-form tournament like that one, but kind of want to see Ben Hutton go up against that kind of competition and see what he can do and continue his development. But
and how's the tan man been? You saw him firing shots from the point?
Yeah, exactly. Just the one-timer.
See that offensive upside? He's the guy that's...
He's been fine. He's
He's one of the guys that's going to bail out the power play next year, remember?
Yes, I've heard that too many times. I've tried to scrub that from my memory bank. Because we have to finish up on non-hockey topics. That's one of the rules.
I'm still floored by last week's...
No, we're not revisiting that.
We're not?
No, I heard from enough people.
You did? Yeah. What did people sound at?
Well, they were siding with you. They weren't happy.
They were shocked that you hadn't seen Empire. Yeah.
So for those that missed, not much of a Star Wars guy, basically. I'm having trouble getting into the Raptors. I'm not feeling. I'm not part of the 6.
Oh, yeah. I think
are we the 4 out here, by the way? Nobody calls us the 4.
Yeah,
right?
we'd be the four,
but nobody
in Drake speak. We'd be the four.
Yeah, so I have trouble with that. First of all,
how close are though? Have you seen like the Trailblazers instead of like Portland or the Blazers? They have Rip City across the front of their jerseys. Yeah. I feel like we're really close to the Raptors going out with just the 6.
All players, player, just number 6.
Yeah, and spelled like they do 6 Roman numeral 9, 69. Are they? How they spell it out there, but it's a tough team to like. That they're an awful aesthetically as far as basketball goes. It's really difficult to watch the Raptors, especially when they're playing a team like the Heat or a team like the Pacers. The Heat, obviously, without Bosch and Whiteside, missing two pretty key components there, and they play a really ugly style of basketball. I like text back and forth with a group of friends back home during the games, and it's constantly complaining about like Lowry sucks, D-Roy sucks, look DeFrozen, look at this guy, it's brick after brick, and But, you know, here they are, one game away from making the Eastern Conference Finals.
Right, so. But I think that's part of the problem for me. And again, as an outsider with no direct connection to Toronto.
Yeah, you would never, how could you enjoy a Raptors game? It'd be impossible.
Well, no. If I thought that they had a legitimate shot to go on some sort of prolonged run here.
Right.
But it's watching it from this distance and knowing what's to come. Like, yeah, if they get past Miami, fine. They're just going to get their asses handed to them by Cleveland.
Yeah.
And if somehow miraculously, you know, LeBron fell ill and they...
I don't think even that would matter.
No. But then look what's standing after Cleveland. It's Golden State. Like, you know, the story ends here. Whether they beat Miami or not, the story pretty much ends here because that next round against Cleveland is going to be ugly and not aesthetically ugly. Like, it's just going to be ugly.
Yeah, and I think most like people that I know that I hang out with that watch the team and like the team understand that they're at least like they need a star. They don't have one. They don't have a legitimate star. And it's nice Lowry and DeRozan were all stars this year, but these aren't stars. And that they've got a great bench. They're really deep. All of those things, but you're just not going to win in the NBA if you don't have a star, and they don't have a star. So you're right. It's just, you know, it's essentially a walk off the plank. It's just how long that walk lasts before you fall and drown in the ocean.
But I feel the coverage we're being force-fed is almost on par with the Blue Jays.
It's ridiculous.
And that Blue Jays team, even though I'm not a Blue Jays fan, they had the star power. Like, they were compelling to watch, you know, the way that they were beating teams and beating them up and bat flips and everything else. Like, you didn't know what was coming next, but you were on the edge of your seat with the Blue Jays and that run. I don't feel that at all with the Raptors. And yet, when I watch the pregame hype and the panel on panel and the guys out in Jurassic Park
God.
You know, the big fat heads of the TV hosts and all that stuff.
Drives me crazy. Yeah. I know. I hate all of it. I hate like Jurassic Park. Like, it's just such a stupid name.
Cutaway after every bucket.
Look at this. These are the greatest fans in the NBA. Why? Because there's like a few hundred guys outside watching on a big screen. Of course, if you put a big screen, like you could put any, you could put a movie, you could put a Disney movie, you know, Bull Durham. Outside Sky Dome, a big TV screen, and people are going to gather together. They're going to look up, and there's going to be a bunch of people out there. Just because there's a bunch of people scattered or piled up right outside the arena does not make it the greatest fans in the NBA. It's outrageous, you know? If the team sucked, no one would be there. That's that's the reality.
At least another week of it, because they're going to get past Miami, and then we'll see what happens against Cleveland. All right, what are we working on right now? You got the Lyndon Vey story out of the way. You got anything else in the hopper?
I think that the next topic that I'm going to start looking at is what's happening here with the replacement for Rolly Melanson. What's taking so long? Doesn't make sense to me. I think that the plan, as my understanding, has been to replace Rolly with Kluche, but here we are in mid-May and there's been still no move. So what's happening here? And if it really isn't going to be Kluche, who are the other options? And that's something that I'm going to be looking at, I think, today.
All right. Well, we look forward to that. As always, appreciate you dropping by the PatCast here on Province Radio. You can find it on iTunes, search Province Radio.
Have you ever thought, will there ever be like a third PatCaster? Like, I was thinking me, you, and then we invite like a guest in.
We couldn't look. I'm open to just about anything. I mean, with the number of cameras here, we got video, Periscope, we take the show on the road to the Steel Toad.
That's
we're all
right.
about digital. So,
is when you do it at the Steel Toad, is that the PatCast on the road? What is
that's
that?
Just the province panel.
That's a province panel.
But we've got Skyping capabilities. We could bring people in. We could go to the Six and find a guest.
That's right. Yes. We got to go to the Six.
We go to Burma. We could track down Lyndon Vey.
No, Trevor Lyndon is Burma.
Oh, Trevor Lyndon was in Burma.
Yeah, Trevor Lyndon is Burma.
Oh.
Did I not explain that properly to you?
Yeah, I thought you meant Lyndon.
No.
It does get confusing.
It does. There's a lot of Lyndons. There's a lot of A's involved.
Ah.
Trevor Lyndon was in Burma. Lyndon is, he's at home in Saskatchewan.
Perfect. There we go.
Glad we got
putting
that
all the pieces together on the PatCast here on Province Radio.